This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of geekdad.com and the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 90. Was there celery involved? The Geek Dad podcast is brought to you by maphook.com. Hello again, everyone. You found it. We're back. By the skin of our teeth, I am Ken Denmead, editor of geekdad.com, publisher of geekdad.com, and obviously not the AV whiz of geekdad.com, because something got screwed up tonight, and there's no video live stream, and I'm very, very frustrated. And if any of our listeners have a good alternate solution to Ustream live streaming and... And whatever else, please, you know what? Drop me a line. I'd appreciate that. Ken at geekdad.com. So, you know, it's episode 90, and we have a lovely group of very patient people here with us tonight to record this gosh darn thing. I'm going to start with Mr. Matt Blum. How you doing this week, Matt?
Oh, doing pretty well, Ken. Things have been hectic, and I spent a little more time in the emergency room over the weekend than I prefer to, but, you know, other than that, things are okay.
Spending time in the emergency room is too much time.
That's sort of my point, yeah. Yeah, it actually wasn't a lot of time, but, I had a severe migraine that refused to go away, so.
Those are nasty. Hopefully they gave you good drugs for it.
They did, yes. Good. And I know what drugs not to have them give me, because there's one that they used to give me, but it makes... The cure is actually worse than the disease for that one. I have a very lousy reaction to it. So,
ouch.
I tell them not to give me that one ever.
We won't have you go into any more detail than that.
Right.
We can all just, you know, imagine the horror. And so hopefully you're feeling better.
Yes, much.
And we have, that is so weird. Everybody's jumping around on my little Skype window here. Suddenly a couple people, that was odd. Jonathan.
Howdy, how are you doing?
Doing okay. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good, yeah, great.
We're getting some rain, so, you know, around here I've noticed it's you're very aware of the weather, because there's a lot of farmers who are very, very aware of how much rain we've been getting. So it's not a lot, but anything's better than nothing, so.
Yeah, we're actually after a number of years of below average rainfall and concerns and stuff, there's actually the snowpack after this winter is huge in the Sierra. The way it all works in California is the weather runs through, the snow builds up on the Sierras and then melts off over the spring into the reservoirs, and so Sierra snowpack is a vital commodity, and it's good this season.
Excellent. Yeah, we don't have any of those.
Mountains? No.
No mountains, basically. Yeah.
Not where you are, no.
I think, like, average, you know, annual rainfall is, like, a foot and a half or something. It's pretty dry around here, so.
Yeah.
They talk about rain in hundreds of inches, which is interesting. You'll be like, oh, how much rain did you get? Well, I got 20. And they're talking about, you know, a fifth of an inch.
Oh, man. It's brutal. Brutal.
Yep. Reminds me of Rango, really. We watched Rango recently. It's like, hey.
Oh, I love that movie. Love that movie. We should talk about that at some point. I'd love it. Well, we did, but.
We did, actually, yeah.
Yeah, love that movie.
It is a lot of fun.
Let's say hello to Michael Harrison.
Hello.
Maybe. Hi.
Hello, Michael Harrison.
How's it going, Michael Harrison?
It's going pretty good for me. I can't lie.
Is it now? Are you continuing as a stay-at-home dad?
No. I am not. I am gainfully employed as of about 3 weeks ago.
Congratulations! We had not heard the news.
Well,
is it anywhere as epic as where your wife works?
Well done,
sir. Thank you.
It's outside of my house, so not so much, but it's pretty nice being able to roll out of bed and go right over to the home office and get started. So,
excellent, excellent. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Of course, that means now, both of you are gainfully employed again. So now we've got no one minding the store during the day. Now we can always fall back on either Michael or Natanya, depending upon who is working from home.
This is true.
Jonathan catches a lot.
We still got Jonathan. That helps.
Yeah.
When he's not out, you know, disrupting the youth of Tribune, Kansas.
Right. I mostly just do that on weekends, though.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And yeah. So before we move on, also hello to Natanya.
Hi.
And so the two of you are separately utilizing, you know, eating up all the bandwidth coming into your house right now.
Yes, yes. Hopefully that's not too much of a problem.
It's probably why it's good we're not doing a video tonight.
Probably so.
All right. Well, so horrible, nasty technical problems aside, it's a pretty interesting time right now. We have some very the list of geeky news was extremely interesting this week. Yes. So, I don't know, who wants to go first?
Well,
all right, go ahead, Matt.
Should we start with like fun stuff or serious stuff?
Let's get the serious stuff out of the way. I am a bad news first, good news last kind of guy.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, there's the big hullabaloo over the iPhone tracking issue.
Yeah.
Which some people seem to think is a big deal, and some people seem to think is not a big deal. And I'm honestly not quite sure where I stand on it at the moment.
Yeah, I will say, well, first of all, how many of us on this call actually even are susceptible to this issue?
I have no iPhone.
Yeah. So I think it's only you and me, Matt.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. It's only you and me who have been discovered this week.
That's
and,
true.
You know, otherwise, you know, probably every Android phone's already been hacked in this way and nobody's paying attention to it. But, all right. I mean, there's probably ways to find this on any phone. But very interestingly, and if we'd have the video up, I was going to show this off, which would have been awesome. I actually downloaded the app that these guys put out that will go hunt the database file down.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's really cool because it actually does like a... it uses OpenStreetMap. And then we'll do a... show all the little dots show up on a time scale. So you hit play, and then it pops up everything that you've done over a period of, like... Let's see, it's, for me, it starts... like back in 2009.
Wow.
Which is wild. But you know what?
Is it reasonably accurate?
It within a general area. First of all, I'll point out that it's only like weekly data. So it's not like it's pinging every as far as I can tell, you know, the way it's reading off data is that it like pings once a week. So each data point is one certain moment on one day in a week. And so it's not like it's tracking you all the time. It's just these little pinpoints. Now, you know, it's picking up stuff like, you know, big general, you know, all the times that I'm at work, or it's picked up a lot of trips down to see my in-laws down near Fresno, things like that. And then it can see the big hits when I like flew out to New York for this kind of thing, or up to I could see the pinpoints for when I was up at PAX Prime last year and when I was at GateCon last year. So I mean, it's in big broad brush strokes, yeah, it's picking stuff up. It's showing me mostly in the Bay Area, and then those other hits. So there is something there, obviously.
Right. My feeling was, as long as it's only being stored on your computer, as long as you encrypt it, you secure it reasonably well, it's really not that big a deal. I don't know. They should have been more upfront about it. This is true. And they shouldn't have gotten really, really defensive about it as soon as it broke, which they did.
I didn't get that impression at all. I mean, first of all, yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think that the data that's being stored is nefarious. I mean, it makes sense that they're pinging towers to, take that. And the data is only stored on your phone and then in backups on your computer that you sync with. So, if you're really worried about it, you can encrypt your backups. There's actually a setting to do that. The terms of service state very clearly that it's going to do this kind of thing if you have location services turned on.
Well, apparently it even does it if you turn it on.
Maybe. Yeah. I haven't seen the definitive, but I mean, the point is that we live in a time when we have a phone that needs to ping towers to do stuff, and so it's almost like common sense. There's got to be a record of that. I mean,
wait, why? Why does there have to be a record of it necessarily? Especially a record that goes back like to the point where you bought the phone.
Why not?
I mean,
the records exist at the phone company.
There's a record of everything else that happens with your phone, yeah. Right? I mean, you expect there to be a record of who you called and when you called them and how long you spent on the phone with them, right? I mean, that's been the case since well before there were cell phones.
Right.
Yep. But would you want that information to, get?
Well, but it's not like it's being made public.
Well, true.
I mean, obviously, if they released this information, if this information could be released publicly, then yeah, okay, that would be a huge privacy violation. But it's not. Yeah. I mean,
PlayStation Network information.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If it no gets one released has publicly, that. That's a problem.
You know, there's an excellent parallel to draw in an odd way. The two big privacy breaches in the news this week.
Significant.
How serious is the tracking on that's going on your smartphone versus how susceptible are these network services that we keep our credit card information? How susceptible are they to hacking?
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, it certainly crossed my mind. I just bought an Xbox, and signing up for things like, okay, this is actually Microsoft. It gives you pause to think.
The single most hacked operating system in the world, not the Xbox system, but the right. Purveyors of the single most hacked
Precisely.
Operating systems in the world. And I'm going to send them my cat.
It gives you pause to think.
Yeah. I mean, so on the iPhone thing, okay, so this information is stored in a file on all of my backups. Okay, I get that. So it's on my desktop computer. So if somebody gets onto my computer, they could hunt this stuff down. Okay. Yeah, but you know what? If somebody is first of all, if somebody's getting on my computer interested in that kind of thing, I'm a little worried anyway. Secondly, if somebody actually got a hold of like the hard drive on my computer, they could probably hunt down a lot more data than just where I was in September of last year. Just, there's so much that's stored on our hard drives. I mean, copies of stuff that we've deleted are still really accessible on our hard drives.
Oh, yeah, unless you use, government-grade software to wipe it out, yeah.
So, trying to get the right perspective on this, I see this more as, I think, some people who just declined to think about what really probably was going on suddenly got woken up and slapped in the face with, you're using a tool that does all these things. This information is somewhere. Now, this is a pretty it's not an out there place. It's hidden on your phone. It's not, there's nowhere, if you're actually holding the phone, there's nowhere that you can actually go push a button and get to this data. You have to either use a forensic tool on the phone or go digging in the backup somewhere on your computer. So it's not even like, if you've got a rooted Android phone or some other thing like that, where you can actually see every single file on the phone. It's not even that easy.
I think a lot of people are misinformed about, you know, what exactly is happening. And I know a lot of people think that the data is getting transmitted to Apple and right. they're somehow the using it. Yeah.
No.
And, I mean, would you feel comfortable with that?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah. So.
Of course not. Yeah. No. I mean, that would absolutely, you know, they would have to get permission before they did that. Explicit permission.
And actually, I think I've heard yes and no about whether or not some randomized form or anonymized form of the data is being sent.
Oh yeah, they get information on pings and towers and such. Right. They just don't get information about who it is who's actually doing it.
Exactly.
They have to get that information if you actually expect them to have decent service. You know, which not that they necessarily do in all cases, but you know, they have to have that kind of information, or how are they going to know what you know, who's using the service where and what times?
Just give them a couple of weeks, and they'll probably come out with a geo-based social network for Apple that uses all of this stuff, and people sign up for it and start setting their statuses. And
turns out this isn't a bug; it's a feature that they're planning to roll out.
The like, people willingly give up that information, and they'll flock to it, put some badges on it.
Yeah, this is actually Mobile Me Time Machine.
Yeah,
I did sort of want to know if there were any way of getting the statistics. How many of the people who were, you know, complaining vociferously about this checked into Foursquare like all the time during the time?
Yeah,
I think it's a fair number of them. Like, you do realize the irony there, guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the end,
that.
I inadvertently gave my location information to Apple badge on Foursquare.
I think it needs to be a T-shirt, you know, Apple. Apple slurped my location data off my phone, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
Well, all I have to say is this week I'm very, very glad that I do not have a PlayStation 3.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because we won't find out about the Xbox breach until next week.
I don't have one of those either.
Yeah, what was it? Dave Banks tweeted earlier. It says, can't remember the last time my board games got hacked.
There's a fair point there.
Yeah, the Luddites are all pointing and laughing. Well, I mean, you know, once again, this is all coming down to we are in this transitional period, moving towards like Snow Crash, towards a true cyberpunk kind of lives where so much does exist in the cloud, and how easy it is to sort of lose our data or get our data taken from us. And it's going to be easy. It's, you know, so we can either choose to be Luddites or be as sensible as possible.
True. But, although, I mean, you're not required to have, you know, to connect to the network in order to use these video games either. I mean, yeah, you can do a whole lot more with them if you do, but you're not absolutely required to.
Why am I getting an incoming Skype call from Computer Repair Service registered trademark?
Wow.
I'm guessing that's
a spam. That's a spam call, yeah.
Okay.
The robots are following you, Ken.
That's it.
It's funny, Matt, that you say you don't have to connect to the network in order to play the games, and that's still true. But I mean, how much longer is that going to be the case?
Well, it's true. I don't know. I mean, you can, there's nothing stopping you from playing the old games still. But yeah, it's true. I mean, the new games do a lot of that because that's clearly the way people want to go. I mean, if you can, you know, you can play Portal 2 co-op mode with somebody who lives half a world away from you. I mean, that's pretty darn cool. You didn't used to be able to do that with a video game. you know, somebody had to come over to your house if they wanted to play the game with you.
But so. I'm just saying that even with single player games moving forward, I think the games companies are going to do what they can to make sure that people, you know, are forced to be online so that they can control piracy there, so that they can make sure that they're delivering a certain experience. I say in like 3-4 years, it's going to be much more ubiquitous.
That's quite probable. Yeah.
And it comes down to who are the games going to be focused at, there are still enough single player games that, you know, don't have co-op modes and don't, you know, it's a type of game that's going to be popular, either MMOs or any of the shooters where you do team stuff online or whatever. And then there's going to be people that just want to play games at home by them, you know, not be connected.
Right. Of course, now there's, you know, there's all sorts of games that you can only access by going to Facebook. So,
yeah,
you know, right. Tons of them. I mean, Zynga's rolling in the cash.
Yeah. If the game is in the cloud, then you can't, you know, some games you can't have a local copy.
Right.
Even single player games.
Yeah. And more of these games are essentially requiring people to plug in a credit card so that, you know, if they want to buy something for this Xbox game, even if it's a single player game, you can buy a horse, or you can buy the expansion pack, and you've got to have the credit card to do that.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
It's a lot of trust that we're putting in these companies.
Yes, but like yeah, like Sony.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty scary one when you think about it, to bring down something like that. Now, who thinks it? No, I'm not even going to go there. I was going to make a comment about, you know, Anonymous denied having done it, even though they were sort of angrier about.
I'm not touching. I'm not touching that.
I will not come down pro or anti.
Yeah.
But,
next topic.
So, speaking of Portal.
Speaking of Portal 2, Portal 2 is truly awesome.
It's the Widowmaker, though, man. I've not seen my husband in like 4 days.
Well, now I'm going back and I'm trying to get all the achievements. So
yeah, that's what I'm doing now, too.
I beat it in like 3 days, and now I'm going back and getting the achievements, and then tomorrow it's going to be onto the co-op. So it's, oh man, it's the best game I've played all year.
Even if I had the time, I would not be allowed to do that. To plug myself over that long. No.
we have an understanding.
So, I mean, you know, I've played Dragon Age 2 all the way through. Took me about 2 weeks. So I can't really complain when Michael plays. We just got Mortal Kombat today too to play together because we've been kind of in our separate spheres. But it's important.
It's such a romantic game. Yes.
There you go.
I know.
There's lots of hearts in it, right? Yeah.
one might call it a bleeding heart game.
Yeah, I was actually amazed at how well that Portal 2 actually managed to live up to its hype, which, given how much hype it had, you would have thought was impossible.
Yeah, I'm sure they felt that when just going into it. They were wondering how they could, you know, excite people and bring something new to the table, and they totally did. It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know how much you've read about the development of it too. Like that originally they weren't even planning on having the Portal device in the game.
Really?
Yeah, they were. It was all going to be about the gels.
Oh well, I think that because I did play the game that the gels came from.
Oh yeah, that they bought.
Power Paint. Yeah.
That they bought. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was essentially a student project. Then they hired on the people from DigiPen who created that game.
Right.
And, which is very similar to what they did with the original Portal,
right?
And the game that they purchased, but the way that they combined the two elements was just fantastic.
Oh, I thought it was very creative. Yeah.
One thing I really love about Valve's games, particularly Portal, is that they have the developer commentary.
Yes.
So that once you play through the first time, you can kind of go back and play through again, and they'll have these little nodes that you can click on and hear the developers talking about a specific level and talk about the process that went behind it. So that's always really interesting for me.
Yeah, I agree. They really did a superb job. I love and the choices of voice actors to add were really quite extraordinary.
See, I haven't even gotten there yet. I've just been playing co-op with my younger son at this point.
Oh man, Stephen Merchant is hilarious.
That's what I hear.
He's brilliant on The Office. So I expect to be if you've ever seen The British Office.
Yeah,
and J.K. Simmons is just. Right. He's so wonderful.
Sold right there. I mean, that's just.
I mean, the only problem with that is that you see pictures of Cave Johnson.
Yeah.
All you have is the picture of J.K. Simmons because you know what he looks like from the Spider-Man movies and all the other stuff he's been in. And you're like, okay, that's just not right. That's not what he looks like. But some of the stuff he says is just classic.
Yes. Yeah.
So does anyone think, you know, having only played the co-op right now, do we need to have like some sort of personality test online that tells you whether you're Atlas or Peabody?
I don't know. They're kind of interchangeable, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I have to say my favorite Cave Johnson quote of the entire game was this next test may contain trace amounts of time travel.
Yes.
All right, now this may be a spoiler, but I want to know, so if anyone else listening, you know, like plug your ears and hum for the next 10 seconds. You know, what is there a Jonathan Colton song at the end?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You can already find it on YouTube if you.
Yeah, I'll have to go hunt it down. Excellent.
Yeah. It's called Want You Gone.
Excellent. Excellent. All right.
It is not as good, I think, as Still Alive, but it is good. Not quite as catchy, I think, but still
it's good. It's a fantastic breakup song.
Yes, kind of.
Not just emotional,
yeah.
An actual breakup. No. All right. Any last words on Portal, or shall we move?
Just you got to play it. If you played the first one, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be playing this right now.
Other than having to do things like write books or have a job or something like that.
Yeah, or not having an Xbox 360 or, you know.
Yeah, because I played Portal 1 on my Mac like last year when it finally came out for the Mac.
Yeah.
I will say that you should look at on SoundCloud, a whole bunch of people have spooled the audio files for, how can I say this without spoiling anything, the various pieces that you attach in near the end.
Yeah.
Some of which are pretty amusing, as you may recall. Yeah. So you can find just the spooled sounds from them.
Yeah, it's definitely the kind of game where I found myself just exploring all the nooks and crannies, and I was well rewarded for that.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. Yeah.
I
wish they had they weren't quite as direct at the way you had to go. Like in the first one, there was a little bit more figuring out where you were supposed to shoot the next portal.
Yeah.
In this one, it was often, well, that's the only place I can shoot it. So obviously that's where I have to, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
I could have done with a little less of that. That was just a little, it was like, let me solve the puzzle. Let me figure it out. Don't point me to there because it's the only place I can go. You know, and I did notice a slight error in one of the posters. But
only you would have noticed that, Matt.
Well, I actually, well, it's because I actually worked on a job for FEMA, being over in the DC area. So they have a poster that's supposed to be in the 1970s section of Aperture Science, and it mentions FEMA.
Spoiler.
Which, well, that doesn't really, if you've seen anything about the game,
it's ruined.
You know that. It doesn't tell you much at all. But FEMA did not, in fact, exist until April of 1979. So, anyway.
Oh my God, that's it. The whole game is ruined for me.
Well, no, it's just unusual for them to miss something like that because they pay such attention to detail. That's all. In any other game, I would completely ignore it.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. All right. Last little bit of news, and we did go out of order on bad to good news or whatever. But of course, we want to take the moment to mark the passing of Elizabeth Sladen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which just was like shockingly out of nowhere too. At least I mean there had been no news that over here that I had seen that she was even ill.
Yeah, I mean, apparently she had cancer for a while, but I had no idea.
Yeah. So, gonna miss. I mean, what they had done with the new show and having her pop up, and it's so sad. So, she, but you know what actually sort of made me a little bit sadder to have learned in all the news coverage of this was that it had only been 3 or 4 months ago that Nicholas Courtenay had passed away, and we hadn't seen much of anything about that because he wasn't on a current show. But he was the Brigadier from the Pertwee era of Doctor Who, and had been in many episodes with her. And in fact, there had been some later like non Doctor Who Brigadier movie things that, or they had done some stuff together afterwards. I forget exactly what it was, but so yeah. So I was kind of disappointed that, you know, he hadn't gotten any attention. We hadn't noticed anything about that, or at least I hadn't. I don't know if anyone else had.
No, I hadn't seen anything.
But so, because it would have been cool to have him pop up again too. But yeah.
Yeah, although when I saw something about that, I was reading up on him. As I recall, he had had a couple of strokes, actually. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. So he was definitely not in the best of health.
That's true. So, a lot of sad Who geeks. On the other hand, just last weekend, we were all made happy by the premiere of the new season, which has been awesome so far. How cool has it been that BBC America is actually using Mark Shepard to do all their VO work, at least around Who and some of the other stuff too.
It's very smart of them.
Very smart of them. He's, yeah. So I think we lost everybody else, Matt.
Yeah. It seems like...
Yeah. You know, like Who, it's really weird. Who is one of those like black holes for me. It's like, the really bizarre thing is that I watched it when I was a kid religiously, like all the reruns that were on, I forget what network it was, but the old school
PBS somewhere.
PBS, and I mean, I remember watching at least two different doctors. I'm not sure which ones they were. One had bigger hair, and I liked that one more. And that's about all I remember.
Let's see. All right, so let's see. Anyway, Matt.
Let's be Tom Baker. Yeah.
Well, maybe.
I think it's Tom Baker. I'm pretty sure it's Tom Baker.
We know how old Netanya is, approximately. So let's see if we can pin this down by deductive reasoning.
So this is probably 86 or 87 when I was watching it, because I remember the house I was in, so I was like 4 or 5. And, yeah, it's really weird. I've tried a couple times to watch the newer ones, and it just hasn't, you know, the show that I've been like out of my seat excited about has been Game of Thrones. So that's what I've been geeking out about. And I kind of want to watch it again after last week's awesome episode. So,
but not necessarily a show that you can share with your kids.
Necessarily.
The Mortal Kombat's fine. You know, this house. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Not until they're in their 20s.
Yeah, why have none of us written up a 10 things parents should know about Game of Thrones?
It's just one thing.
Number one, don't show it to your kids. Number two.
Number one, lots of boobies. But, you know, it was written, all these scenes were written for the women. So, you know, yeah. the romance stuff originally. Yeah, just there.
That was the funniest thing in the world. You know, that whole, was it in New York Times or one of the...
Yes.
The guy saying that it was, you know, obviously misogynistic and horrible and no woman should watch it.
Not even that it's misogynistic, but that no woman in her right mind would be interested in this kind of thing. No living woman was the quote. Sorry.
There you go.
No living woman.
And that HBO had added the, you know, certain scenes to make it more appealing to the women. Right?
Yeah, well, that was silly. They've added the scenes to make it more appealing to guys, but
yeah, no, I mean, it was clearly someone who had just doesn't like fantasy literature, obviously, or fantasy anything, because there's so much more that's just so brilliant about the show, and it's just so exciting to see it. I'm just such a total fangirl of George R. R. Martin, and yeah, it's been awesome. But yes, not kid friendly in the least.
No, quite a bit not. So back to the Doctor Who thing. I guess she would have been after Tom Baker.
Well, but you know what? It being PBS, it could have been.
That's true. Yeah.
It could have been Baker to
Davison.
To Davison, yeah. Was there celery involved?
Was there what?
Celery.
Celery.
Gosh, you know, I honestly don't know. I just don't. I watched it all the time.
Was one of them sort of blonde, kind of?
I think.
Okay, that would be Peter Davison.
It's, you know, I think it's honestly, I want to love Doctor Who, but it's really overwhelming to try to come into this. It's so vast. You know what I mean?
There's no good
entrance point.
There is, actually. Point. There is a very good entrance point, and that is the start of the new series. Go back, and actually, what was it? People were saying that the whole thing was for sale. First four seasons or whatever were for sale on Amazon for like $30 this week. But start with Eccleston. Go back to, you know, of the new series. You know, it's so difficult with the way the English call it. The first series of the new era. But go start with Eccleston. And then, you know, Eccleston starts it off great. Very dynamic. And then David Tennant just makes it gold.
Yeah, see, we did watch the first Eccleston, the first episode of that one, and Natanya wasn't that impressed, and I
that was
told
the one
that...
with the mannequins, right?
Yeah.
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 And
because I'm totally an Anglophile, I will watch virtually anything that ever is on BBC. But and you'd think that, you know, science fiction, time travel, clearly things that I'd be interested in. I don't know.
Well, try David Tennant, because he was... He's really a great actor. He's a great actor.
That's what I've heard.
And definitely a cutie, and that doesn't hurt.
This is my fighting hand.
Anyway. So much good stuff. Have you watched Primeval?
Mm-mm.
No, actually, no, they have. Have they shown it on BBC America? I thought they had. That one's wacky.
I don't think I know that one.
Primeval English series been about through about three or four season or series now, which is like 10 or 12 episodes each. The idea being that rifts in time start popping up all around England, and starts out with like dinosaurs would come popping through.
That's the one that Alexander Siddig's on, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, he doesn't show up until like third, fourth season.
Okay, yeah, I heard he was on it then, yeah.
But very,
it is on BBC America.
Yeah. Okay. You know, very interesting, and it's one of those things like with the English series that it's gone through some people and some characters. It just seems like probably because the actors had to go off and do other things, and so they had to be written in and written out and done different things with. So it's been a little bit discombobulated that way. But the way they've treated the science fiction of it, and you know, at one point having something have happened in the past that does literally change the universe, and one character goes away, and then, you know, it very interestingly done, so and fun and wacky, but okay, I think that's enough. We got any posts of the week?
Well, I think I wanted to mention, and I think Jonathan said he wanted to talk about it too, the the two posts actually that Andy Robertson sort of reposted from Geek Dead UK about I can't remember what the guy's name is, but the UK Geek Dad whose 8-year-old daughter, he was teaching her how to play chess, and she decided to rewrite the rules to just, you know, create a new game of it.
Which is just amazing.
Plastic animal chess.
And it is the rules were published today.
Right.
And there, it's great. I really have to try playing
Mark
it.
Mark Cengizzi.
Yeah, that's right. But,
So the game proceeds like a normal game of chess. The board is 9 squares wide rather than 8. Rather than white and black pieces, players choose plastic toys to represent each character.
It was created by an 8-year-old. Yep, right. Exactly.
Of course, you have to sort of keep track of that because since there's no colors, it's hard to remember which
sheet of paper saying here's what the turtle does, and you have to like keep referring to it.
All right.
But he said after playing, then you start to remember,
right?
You know, which is cool.
Rather than remove the pieces when they are taken, they remain on the board, and a jail area is required to the next to the board as a temporary holding area.
This is really great.
Each player has 18 pieces, and then all right, so the pieces are. In the back, there's a guard,
which is basically to stop the king from getting hurt.
Right. Two, the master jumps as far as basically the bishop.
Yeah.
Well, except I think they said he can jump though.
So right. Jumps as far as he wants diagonally.
So like a super bishop. Basically.
Right. The king.
One space diagonally and forwards, but not backwards.
But not backwards.
So the king can only go forward.
Right.
And only diagonally.
The doctor, or
oh, I guess, and
doctor.
I wasn't clear if it was diagonally, that is diagonally forwards, or diagonally and straight forward.
But anyway. Yeah, sure.
Interesting. Moves up. The doctor moves up to 5 squares forwards and revives one piece that it is next to, which is just amazing. You know that that right there adds a whole new dimension to the game. The jailer.
So if you die, you want to make sure you die in the lane that the doctor's in, because he can't move right and left.
Right, right. The jailer moves one in any direction. Pieces he takes are put in jail. If he is taken, the jailed pieces are released to their starting positions. Holy cow. I mean, and let's see, the knight moves forward or sideways, can take pieces exactly 2 squares away. Each player has 4 knights. And then the flyer moves 2, 5, or 7 squares in any direction. What?
Yeah, it's kind of curious. Like, trying to figure. It's not entirely clear how you win.
Well, I suppose you still need to take the king because the king needs to be protected.
I assume you actually need to take the king though, because I don't know how you could possibly prevent check.
All right.
I mean, seriously, how would you do that?
Then the replacer, who moves one space in any direction, and pieces he takes are swapped with a jailed piece. So he doesn't.
It's a little confusing, but you know, it's created by an 8-year-old, so of course, you know, bits of it are going to be confusing.
Right.
But you know, I think you'd have to refine some of the rules here and there, because it's like, okay, the doctor can revive pieces. So does that mean if a piece dies, it stays where it is?
Yeah, well, because it says rather than remove the pieces they're taken, they stay on the board. So it's like, right. You know, and
they become obstacles, and you have to go around them.
Right, that's right.
Yeah,
except unless the jailer takes them, in which case they go into jail.
And then they go to the jail. Then you got to capture the jailer or take the jailer to let them out.
Crazy. Oh, I love it.
I mean, you know, I was looking at this and you think, you know, oh, this is ridiculous. I mean, look at all these different moves. But, I mean, have you ever looked at, have you seen Shogi, the Japanese chess, where, you know, you've got all these pieces and they all move different ways and then they get promoted and they move differently, you know? And so, I mean, you end up with, you know, this is 18 different, well, it's 18 pieces, but it's not 18 different pieces.
Right.
This is like, you know, 10 different types of pieces. And so, you know, you can't, you know, I mean, once you, like, I bet if you played this enough, you know, you learn strategies and you figure out what works and what doesn't. And you eventually do think, oh, you know, I can see where the attacks are coming from. You know, here it goes. I got to protect my king.
Right.
But I think it's interesting that you, because it's unfamiliar, and because she didn't have any, you know, gaming conventions to, like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, here, you don't do stuff like that. Like, you know, it's like, no, I can do whatever I want. And that's, I think, true. It's cool that she's come up with a game that you could play. I mean, you know, at this point, because of the way it works, like, you're not going to run into inconsistencies. Like, oh, okay, well, this isn't going to work. You know, but it's an odd sort of, you know, construction.
I just realized that there's a link to a review there, but it doesn't actually work.
Oh. Okay, right. We'll fix that.
In fact, neither does the link after it to the game.
Oh.
Should probably have checked that. Oh well.
You know what it comes down to is somebody needs to call them up and license it so they can create, you know, iPhone and Android game version of plastic dinosaur chess. In fact, wait a minute. Matt, let's go buy the URL right now. Plasticdinosaurchess.com. See if it's available.
I think their site is having issues. The game people's site is having issues. I think that's actually why it's not working.
It was the post was so popular we crashed Andy's website.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted it at Roger Ebert, but he didn't seem to notice. So.
All right. Anybody else got posts of the week?
Well, I had the I cross-posted this from Geek Mom this week. It's the Jennifer Tilbon. If I said their name wrong, I'm sorry, but it's Tylbon, Jen. She goes by Jen. 10 things I've learned from failed experiments, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. She goes through everything from cooking mishaps to driving around with liquid nitrogen in her car. And it's such an awesome thing to see sort of that Geek Mom day-to-day experimenting and things going wrong, but yet being able to kind of, like, you know what, I'm never gonna do that again. So my favorite, I think, is the hairspray is her number 5. Hairspray and wasp spray are not interchangeable as bug anesthesia. I figured you can hairspray flies to anesthetize them before preparing them for bug collections. It traps their wings and makes them easy to collect. Surely it would work on wasps. It doesn't. It just makes them mad.
Unless you light it.
Yeah, but it's the whole geeky approach, but with a mom and woman spin. Like, a guy would never take a bottle of hairspray out, right? No. But a geek mom would.
Well, only to burn the wasp nests.
Well, no, she's trying to collect it for her bug collection.
Right, we would never do that. We would just simply take the hairspray out with a lighter and use it as a flamethrower to torch the. And
for our obviously. For our crispy bug collection.
Right.
Well, you know, we'd have this genius idea that we're going to burn out the wasp nest, and then we'd light the eaves of our house on fire.
Yeah.
Yes.
Genius. No, it'll be fine, hon. I'm just gonna burn the nest out. No problem.
What could possibly go wrong?
Honey, call 911.
Although, in sort of connection to this, she mentions using dish soap instead of washing dishwasher soap, which cannot be interchanged in spite of the fact.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no, no.
Connected to wasps, if you dilute dish soap in a bottle of water and spray it on a wasp's nest, it will kill the wasps. It's a very cheap way to get rid of them without having to buy Raid or anything. We learned this by searching the interwebs last year when we had a nasty infestation in our house. So,
and it was actually correct.
It was actually correct. Yes, okay. Yes.
Because you found it on the internet doesn't necessarily mean.
Did you check with Snopes first?
I'm sure, because Michael was the one that found this, and he's, like, you know, the king of proving me wrong via the internet and Snopes. So everyone in his family, like, he's Debbie Downer.
Like, hey, your new nickname, cool.
This happiest meme about this child who's sick and all these people, and be like, no, it's not.
Actually,
Actually.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Yeah. My mother-in-law likes to send long emails about, you know.
Oh, yeah, forwarding the latest.
Nope.
Sorry, here's the link to Snopes that completely disproves it. And, you know.
I was finally able at least to get her to understand that the whole thing's about, you know, Microsoft will pay, you know, such and such for each time this is forwarded is never going to actually happen.
Right.
No, Google will do that.
That actually sounds like something Google would probably do. All right.
Well, you got one, Mike? Michael?
Yeah. Michael? Yeah, I do actually. This one's actually Jonathan's. The Geek's Dilemma is a breadth versus depth of interests post. This one just spoke to me because, I mean, it definitely explains, I think, some of the issues that I have in my own ADD with the internet and with all of the things that I'm interested in. I just thought it was an interesting article. Do you want to say anything about it, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it kind of goes along with my you know, often stated fear that I'm not actually a geek.
I think we can all vouch for your geek.
Well, you know, I mean, just there are a lot of, I think, sort of the typical geek areas that I'm, you know, not involved in. And, you know, and I think where it comes out is, you know, I posted that just kind of say, well, you know, maybe that is a different type of geek, right? The sort of person who doesn't necessarily get weight into a particular, you know, either genre or specific, you know, thing, but is just interested in everything. And that, you know, that tends to be my problem. It's like, well, you know, I look at, you know, I see people tweeting or talking about, you know, like Portal 2, for instance, like, how do you find the time to play, you know, several hours of one thing in a weekend? Because, you know, I'm just interested in so many different things that it's hard for me to focus in on. It's, you know, sorry, it's hard for me to focus in on any one particular thing for an extended period of time.
And I think that it causes a lot of sort of background stress in a lot of people because it definitely does with me. And even while I'm doing something that I enjoy, like playing Portal, I popped Portal in today for 10 minutes because I wanted to bang out a couple of quick achievements. And as I did that, I was like, I just bought Mortal Kombat. Why am I playing this? I just bought Mortal Kombat. Oh, and I was playing Mass Effect a couple of weeks ago, and I still haven't beaten that. And then, I have my World of Warcraft subscription. I haven't logged into that in like a month. And it's just this like string of things.
Right. Yeah.
And it's constantly humming in my head.
For me, you know, it's not as much video games, but, you know, it's books and board games. Where I think, oh, you know, I've got this book to read, you know, oh, and I want to try this board game. And a lot of times, you know, I'll play a board game and I'll love it. And it'll be a while before I play it again because, you know, well, I want to try that next one.
Yeah.
And I know there are people who's like, well, I'm going to play this one and get great at it, you know, or I'm going to read this book, you know, over and over and over again and until I know it front to back. And for me, it's like, you know, I mean, I buy the books with the thought that I'm going to read it again. Otherwise, why do I have it? But a lot of times, you know, I have the book and I don't read it again because, you know, I want to read that next book that I just heard about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that definitely bleeds through to fandoms as well too. I've definitely found that there are like, I don't know, like turf issues almost. You get in conversations with people and they want to know what shows and movies and things you're into. And I find as I get older, I don't clutch to ones as much as I did before, but some people still do. It's like, it's Trek or nothing. You know what I mean? Like if they had, they always have one that they could pick if they had to. And when I was younger, I certainly did that a lot. You know, for a while it was Star Wars. There really was nothing else. And then they ruined it. But, you know, as I get older, it's like, I feel like almost so overwhelmed that like, I'm very, very cautious into letting new fandoms come into my life. You know, it's like we're going to have to sit down and talk, get to know each other, and see if this is going to be a long-term issue because, you know, I've got a lot of things going on in my life right now. And it's like, can I really deal with a long-term commitment where I'm going to have to sit and watch every single episode of, like, you know, Stargate, for instance. I've always wanted to start watching Stargate. And it's like, I just know that's going to be such a huge investment of time. it's like I resist it because there's so much other stuff I have to do.
Right there with you. I have, in the last few months, I decided to finally dig my way through. I'd caught individual episodes, never gotten all the way through the whole storyline of Babylon 5. Knew it to be beloved in geek circles, but had never gotten there myself. I am now finally, I've gone from start to, I'm in early season 5 now, and enjoying the heck out of it and glad to be, you know, in the know now. But sometimes it you know, you got to find the time, you got to sort of dedicate yourself to this thing and make it happen.
And I haven't seen Babylon 5 in ages.
Yeah. I mean, it almost makes me, you know, I'm sometimes, you know, happy when a show that I like gets canceled or ends, because then I know at least I can finish it. good, there's only 3 more episodes and that's it, like, you know, I can.
Why it's easy to love Joss Whedon shows,
right?
You have to say, you know,
they'll all end quickly, so
yeah,
but they, like, won't end well, that's the problem.
No.
And what's worse,
I mean, well, okay, I mean, Buffy did not end quickly.
That's just it's a joke, Matt.
I remember when X-Files, you know, finally finished, and I had, you know, I'd only watched a few episodes of X-Files because I never started at the beginning, and that's the other problem, is I'm someone who wants to start at the beginning. So for me, it was like, oh, well, X-Files, okay, it lasted what, 7 or 8 years? Like, okay, someday I could finish that. The Simpsons, I'm just, you know, never, it's not going to happen.
Just think, you know what? All we can do now is thank heavens for Netflix, and just we can now all be safe in the knowledge that sooner or later, and it may not be until we're all on Social Security, but sooner or later we will be able to catch up with all the series that we never got to.
Yeah, is that such a good thing though?
Yes,
because
yes, it is.
Because I've lost entire days to old shows because of Netflix, because I can, there's the choice. It's the choice at the end of every episode, whether you just keep going or whether you stop for the night.
Right.
So this is what I'm picturing now. So, you know, we have a very clear idea of what nursing home looks like for our parents' generation, but for our generation, it's just going to be like tons of geeks in nursing homes with huge big screen TVs watching Stargate and Babylon 5 and X-Files for, like, till we die.
Drooling all over the place.
There you go. That's it.
I, you know, a friend of mine just sent me this website. It's GOG.com. It's good old games.
Oh, my God. I love that.
You know, it's all these. Well, I mean, the thing is, I don't have a PC running Windows XP at this point. But I was looking at it, I was like, oh, these are all those computer games that were out when I was in high school and I didn't have the money to buy them. And now I could play them for like $4.
Well, think about all the Namco or all the other games that are getting ported to iPhones and iPads now.
Yeah.
Go back and play everything that we loved in the 70s and 80s. We're going to have in our pockets.
If only people would stop making new stuff, I could get caught up.
That's it. There it is.
You might just have to do that.
Okay, I'll try that. All right. That'll be my next post. Stop making stuff.
Yeah, stop making stuff. I want to catch up.
Until I'm caught up.
That's something I can get behind.
That'll be excellent. All right, I'm going to do one quick thing, and then we got to wrap this up because we started late. We're ending even later. We're having a great, great podcast, but my family will start frowning at me and come in here and beat me senseless and take me away. I would like to simply point out the one very cool new thing that we've got going on Geek Dad right now. Each and every bright and early morning at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time for the next couple of months at least, we are posting a Google a Day puzzles. I had gotten the opportunity, they had approached me to sort of you know, to spread the word about them a few weeks ago. And they came back and said, hey, you want to carry them on Geek Dad? And I thought that was just like, oh, okay, very cool. We like puzzles. The puzzles, we've got a nice, strong subset of readers who love our puzzles. And so why not add some more? And so the Google a Day puzzles are now running every morning on Geek Dad with the previous day's puzzle answer in visitext, also in the puzzle. The cool thing about these puzzles is that the whole idea behind them is to, realistically, it's not so much what you know, is how good are you at searching for the answer on Google and using all the myriad magical ways that the Google search tool can be used. So, yeah, give it a shot. And one really cool thing is we're leaving comments open on these. So don't read them. And, you know, leaving the comments open so that people can work together on them. But if you want to work on it by yourself, don't look at the comments. And if you don't want to run into the possibility that someone somewhere has already posted the answer on the internet and the regular Google search tool would actually point you to that answer, if you go to the Google a Day site, their search tool actually will filter out any proper if anyone has posted the answer, it will filter that out and it will only give you search results that, you know, sort of pertain to what you're searching for. I have no idea how they do it. It's like, it'll give you the answer to your question, but it won't lead you to the answer to the puzzle. I don't know how you sort of separate that.
Someone said something that something about, you know, they're giving you Google search results from the previous day or something like that.
Yeah, that could be it.
You know, so yeah. Maybe like everything's there except for what people have already put, you know.
So it's sort of like Google time travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really, really cool, and check it out if you are any kind of puzzleholic.
Yeah, I do have to say that I was looking at the yesterday's answer from, like, I guess early this morning. Mm-hmm. And it says, you know, search Century of Columbus trip to New World. Find out it took place in the 15th century. Like, if you don't know that.
You would be surprised.
I know. But it's sad. I mean.
Well, as more and more people get used to just having to search for stuff.
Right.
They're not going to devote that stuff to memory.
I use my hard drive space when I can store it in the cloud.
there's some things that I have a feeling people are still going to be expected to know.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of them.
Could be. All right. So very quickly around the room, anything upcoming that people want to plug or mention? Michael, you got anything coming up in the next week or two?
Oh my God. not really. I'm hoping to get some posts up before the end of the month. My work schedule's been particularly rough on me, so.
Gotcha. No problem. Jonathan, how about you?
How
many posts will you be getting?
Yeah, really.
I'm you know, the reason I hadn't written a whole lot over the weekend was because I've been reading this book, Makers by Cory Doctorow.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
It's a novel, but I mean, it's like a novel set at basically, you know, the world has turned into Maker Faire in the future. I mean, it's he's got like, he just throws out these ideas, like these two guys who make stuff, and he's like, oh, and look, this is another thing that they made or they just invented or thought about, or, you know, and you're looking at it as like, well, you can make a business out of that. I mean, really. And then he just, okay, next idea, you know. And it's been a great novel. It's got a good story in it, but yeah. At the same time, he's really like he's done his research on maker culture, kind of, you know, projected a world in which, you know, it gets big and then it crashes. I mean, it's like both, like he covers the rise and the fall of it, it's really fascinating. So I'm hoping I can. I'm in the last like 10 pages or so, and so I'm definitely planning to write that one up.
Good. Natanya, you got anything?
I have stuff, but I can't really talk about it.
Well, fine.
I'm very busy. Let's put it that way. I'm extremely busy. I'm very excited about Maker Faire coming up. I'm going to get a chance to. Yeah. I've already met you, Ken. So, you know, that's like whatever. But,
that's but how most people feel after once or twice. Yeah.
I'm very excited about getting to meet Jenny because I've been working with her on Geek Dad and Geek Mom for a while. And I'll have completed the whole Geek Mom, what is it, a quadfecta? I'll have met all of the founding members of Geek Mom. So be kind of awesome. And I've been just, it's like, I don't have enough time to even, I don't know. You know how it is. I your signature beneath your emails to me always, sleep deprived.
Yeah.
Like, there's just not enough room in my head for everything. You know, I feel like no matter what I do, I'm just missing something.
Exactly.
But we're getting there.
Right there with you. Right there with you. All right, Matt, you got anything?
Lots of things in the works. Not sure what's getting done when exactly. So don't want to promise anything.
Okay. All right. And me, I've only got one little old thing that I want to just sort of plug, and that is one weekend from today, Tuesday, on the 3rd of May, the Geek Dad's Guide to Weekend Fun will hit the proverbial shelves. My joke is all of the real bookstore shelves in my town have gone away, so there are only virtual shelves around here. But, and actually through all the Twitter stuff that's been bubbling up and everything, as of right now it's at number 1272 on Amazon in pre-orders.
Woo-hoo!
And number one in experiments and projects and number seven in crafts and hobbies. I had to apologize earlier on Twitter to Bonnie Burton for having shot past her Star Wars craft book, but that was cool. And in fact, we should hopefully be able to see and meet Bonnie Burton at Maker Faire, I believe.
Ooh, really? Very cool.
Because she's Bay Area. She works, I believe she works at LucasArts. So that will be cool. The one other thing before we all go that I should remember is to thank our sponsor.
Yes.
Maphook.com. And I will thank both Jonathan and Jenny for bugging me to the side not to forget Maphook.com. Just everyone remember, Maphook.com is this cool little location-based social networking tool that you might want to check out if you're bored of your Facebook places and your checking in on other things. Maphook lets you take pictures and geolocate them and geolocate notes and reviews and anything, and then lets you tag them with some really cool geeky tags and even combine them into stories that you can share with people about, you know, trips or seasons of your kids' soccer team or anything that you can think of. It's really, really cool. For example, on my birthday, we went wine tasting and I did hooks for each of the wineries that we went to and put little reviews in and pictures and collected it all into a story so that anyone who comes along later can see all the cool wineries that we found and what to check out. So go ahead and check them out. It's an iPhone app, and they are at maphook.com. And we really, really, really appreciate their sponsorship of all the Geek Dad podcasts. And with that, I will say that this has been an excellent, excellent podcast. I'm going to thank Mr. Matt Blum, as always. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, and thank you, as always, for hosting.
Absolutely. I will thank Bonnie and Clyde, a.k.a. Natanya Barron and Michael Harrison. Thanks, guys, for coming on tonight.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem.
Always, always awesome to have you guys. And Mr. Jonathan Liu.
Our
very most dependable, awesomest, excellent game guy, writer, and proofreads most of the stuff that gets up on Geek Dad and makes sure that all of our everything looks good. So, thank you, Jonathan.
You're welcome. Thanks
and
a lot.
Everybody else, everyone who muddled through and at least listened to us tonight and hung out in the chat room, thanks, Jenny. Thanks, Luke. Thank you, gentle listeners, for listening to this. This has been The Geek Dads, episode number 90. I'm Ken Denny, editor of GeekDad.com. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next time. So long.
Geek Dad.
Bye-bye.
Geek Dad.